This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And I am delighted to have Dr. Naomi Wolf back with us once again. Naomi, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I love speaking with you and your audience.
Always great having you, and so much to talk about. But I think first thing I'll mention, your books, obviously I've had you on twice before, well, a couple, even more times, but on your latest books, the latest one, Facing the Beast, Courage, Faith and Resistance in a New Dark Age. And I love that, that spiritual thread that runs through that. And before that, The Body of Others, New Authoritarians, COVID-19 and the War Against the Human. So they are all available and the links are all in the description. But I wanted you all to talk about something quite different. And that's maybe kind of eating for health, I think, and taking back control of your immune system. And I came across, I think it was the one on mustard seed oil, whenever that got restricted. And then I started delving into a number of the other videos you had done. And I'm guessing you probably hadn't thought that you were going to be doing cooking videos from your kitchen.
No, indeed. And, you know, as I headline it, I'm a bad cook. So this is the bad cook cooks. But I had to change my life when I realized just how serious the interventions in our food supply and our pharmaceutical, like, over-the-counter supply were. Mm-hmm.
Well, there seems to be no end to your talents, Naomi, and I've really enjoyed watching those. But maybe we'll get into the mustard seed oil video. I had never heard of mustard seed oil, and I had no idea that actually it was a bad product, and then it got bad, and then I started delving into that. And first thing is, where can I get mustard seed oil? That's my first thought of the UK. But tell us what that was about, and then we'll step back and maybe look at, mention some of the other videos and this whole, I guess, battle with FDA and what their role is in our health. But it, mustard seed oil, why on earth was that banned?
It's so crazy, Peter. People who know my work know that I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm a poetry defil. You know, I have no background in any of this. And I didn't think I'd ever be shining a light on this issue of taking back control of our health and well-being. But this is what happened to me. As you know, because you've had me on several times for this reason, I oversaw and oversee a group of 3,250 doctors and scientists and specialists and biostatisticians and medical fraud investigators, clinicians, research scientists who united to go through the Pfizer documents released under court order. There are 450,000 documents, and the FDA had asked for those to be kept hidden for 75 years. Well, our volunteers have now produced almost 100 reports linking to the originals. So you don't have to take anyone's word for it. You can click through and see the original document, right, that is it links to. And
the latest book is coming out in a month, I believe.
That is correct. And what they found, sadly, is the greatest crime against humanity in recorded history. That Pfizer, with the collusion of the FDA, meaning the collusion of the CDC, the collusion of the White House, all of whom were looped in to this genocide, really, yeah, and sterilization of the population, they inflicted catastrophic damage on us that is not over, right? And on Western Europe, no doubt, everywhere Pfizer was rolled out. And this is just what the documents we got to see because of the successful lawsuit. So we don't know the AstraZeneca papers. We don't, you know, the Moderna papers are just coming out. We're seeing the same sterilization effect in the Moderna papers. But we see from the Pfizer documents that Pfizer knew they were killing people, creating catastrophic events like stroke and blood clots, lung clots, leg clots, dementias, heart damage, catastrophic scale, liver damage, kidney damage. They knew that the vaccines didn't work to stop COVID. The third most common side effect in the documents is COVID. And they concluded a month after rollout that the vaccines had failed to stop COVID, didn't tell us. And the centerpiece, and I'm just recapping quickly, is that they were grossly experimenting on disrupting human reproduction. And they knew they were causing what they called reproductive disorders in women, especially at industrial scale. And so now we have a 13 to 20% drop in live births in the United States and Western Europe. Igor Chudov, a mathematician who works with government databases, confirms that there are a million missing babies in Western Europe now. And we know why. So given all of that, and given the, it caused such an emotional toll to look at this and report on this week after week, that I started to think, well, okay, we know what the sicknesses are. How do we heal people, right? We need to be able to focus on something positive and constructive for humanity so that people have some hope, you know, that they are not beholden for their health to the same institutions and industries that murdered them or and sterilized them and disabled them. So I began to look back at, I began this series called Liberty Lifestyle, right? That looks back at traditional remedies, forgotten remedies that used to be very common, and also alternative treatments, notably herbs and spices, which have been used for millennia to treat the kinds of conditions that people now have, you know, have always had, but now, the injuries, we know that they're ramped up. And so I've been looking at, okay, if my loved ones who are vaccinated are going to have circulatory problems, what has traditionally healed circulation? If people are going to have heart problems, what's traditionally protected the heart? And then, you know, and other questions, right, based on what we knew to be the damage and injuries in the Pfizer documents. And so what has been amazing about these videos and the research I've been doing is, and you mentioned it with mustard oil. Well, A, what's amazing is that it's even more censored than our work on the Pfizer documents, like even more censored as you can be. And I was censored by the White House and the CDC and the, you know, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Collins, Dr. Walensky, 15 White House staffers in 2021 singled out my tweet about menstrual dysregulation and identified it, put pressure on Twitter and Facebook to censor me. This has all come out in the lawsuits by two attorneys general. As censored as our work on the Pfizer documents has been, and even my alert to women before the Pfizer documents, you know, as recently as last week when my husband was detained in the Netherlands for 7 hours and questioned by three different officials, when I was in Europe for the first time to talk to people face-to-face about the Pfizer documents, as censored as all of that has been, our work on common traditional remedies such as a mustard oil or turmeric have been even more censored. Literally, YouTube deplatformed us for the mustard seed oil. Twitter briefly froze us. You know, to this day, I just did a report on a sperm suppressor and a hormonal estrogen disruptor in personal lubricant, over-the-counter CVS personal lubricant, and YouTube is having none of it. So, and it's not because it's an adult subject. I mean, you know, there's polyethylene glycol in toothpaste, and, you know, YouTube is having none of it. So it stands to reason. I mean, I looked up the numbers, and the numbers for, you know, basically we're not just threatening one product of one pharma company now, right? Since what I'm doing is not just saying, oh, turmeric's been used for millennia, but actually looking up peer-reviewed studies on turmeric or mabi bark in coconut water or, you know, sassafras or guava leaves or, you know, all of the traditional remedies I've explored, the peer-reviewed studies show very often much better outcomes using these remedies than their pharmaceutical rivals. So I'm not surprised. And you can, you know, imagine the scale of the market that we're then threatening. So I'm not surprised that I'm being so widely censored, but I do feel like it's a very positive thing to explore. It's changed my life for sure. And I do feel like it's a race against time because many of the traditional remedies that have been marginalized, you know, you can say, well, this is just normal pharmaceutical greed. They don't want us to know that actually you stabilize hypertension in 2 weeks more easily with Mabi bark and coconut water, traditionally in use for centuries in the Caribbean, than with, you know, blood pressure medication that is patented based on pharmaceutical petroleum derivative products. But in addition, we're finding shocking, like they, if they can't get us with the injections to restrict our sex drive and our reproductive health, they're getting us with our food supply and our personal care supply, meaning we found a sperm suppressant in common baking mixes in the United States. I don't think these are allowed in Britain or Europe, but it's worth looking. I just threw out Progresso breadcrumbs because they had the same sperm suppressant. Like, we don't need a sperm suppressant in our food supply, any of us. And also in our personal care products, we're finding parabens, which are hormone disruptors, bad for men and bad for women. But I'm literally astonished to find it in personal lubricant, which goes right into your body if you're a woman and directly affects your partner if he's a man. So it's shocking that these ingredients are continue to be fed into our food and personal care supply to lower our sex drive, lower the aggression of men as warriors, for sure. You know, destabilize the family, I would argue, because everyone's less happy, and degenderize us, basically.
But this is all part of, I think I have so many conversations with friends in the UK saying, actually, where do we get food? And beginning to look at going back to how food is produced and going to local farms and that sort of thing. And this is a much wider conversation, I guess, of massive mistrust that a lot of us now have over the last 4 years of regulatory bodies, of what we are told, and looking for alternatives. So I get what you're doing fits into that massive void that people are crying out for, just good, honest, straightforward ideas of how we need to live our lives better, because the government certainly aren't going to do it for us. It's up to each of us.
Indeed. And we used to, in the United States, we have what used to be a very good law compelling the FDA to compel any food or medicine to fully disclose all of the ingredients. And I've been shocked to find that, you know, there are huge carve-outs. I mean, I shouldn't be shocked at anything now after the Pfizer documents, but, you know, one of the issues I disclosed in my video today is that in the U.S. toothpaste only has to disclose a fraction of 1% of their ingredients. We literally don't know what's in the rest of the ingredients. However, we're warned that if we swallow any toothpaste, we need to go right to the poison control center or right to the hospital. So yes, the distrust is, I guess, long overdue. I think they're different. I feel like when I'm in Europe, the food supply is healthier because I don't think you're allowed some of the adulterants that we have, you know, that we have in the United States. I mean, there are memes on social media, and I've experienced this for myself, where there's a long list of psychochemicals added to a global brand in the US that is not added, at least not disclosed, in the UK. However, I think that, you know, I know from having lived in the UK and gone back many times to visit, not since the pandemic, but I know that your wonderful tradition of healthy farming, good treatment of animals, local production of vegetables and fruits is being disrupted by big ag and no doubt by big pharma, the way ours is in the US. And one of the immediate things too is they want to mRNA inject animals, and they want to, like in the US, they're starting to do kind of a social credit score for animals, or like a, you know, surveillance for animals, that every single animal is tagged, you know, livestock is tagged. And they also have ridiculous laws in the United States. Thomas Massey in our Congress is trying to pass freedom to farm bills or food freedom bills. And I'm sure you'll need something similar in the UK, from what I understand, in the sense that there are laws against local producers of livestock or cows or sheep slaughtering their cows locally and bringing the meat to farmers markets. They have to be fed into this whole kind of industrial food system and shipped for miles and slaughtered in FDA slaughterhouses that are largely, and you know, then many of our food, our meat producers like Smithfield are owned by China or being bought up by China, right? So you're not even getting, you're getting food processed by our worst enemies, the ones who my reporting showed have the IP, the manufacture, the distribution of these mRNA injections that have decimated our populations. So why would you trust food manufactured that way? And from what I understand, I do think something similar is happening in the UK. Like you used to be able to, I remember when I was a graduate student in Oxford, you could go to the local market and local farmers were selling their local apples and carrots and their local meat in a pretty farm-to-table way. And I would be surprised if that is still as reliable as it used to be. But you tell me.
Well, yeah, with the regulatory board, we've always had kind of a gold-plated regulatory industry across Europe on everything. And we, I guess, see the US as being lax in different industries. But I think that's, there is a lot of restrictions now, certainly the farming community. We've had massive demonstrations, as they have all over Europe, at the restrictions and the pushback against farming. You said you're in the Netherlands, and they are some of the biggest farmers in Europe, actually, for what they provide. And they are up in arms at the massive restrictions that they face, which I guess is means that actually the food will be brought in from elsewhere, from far away. So yeah, we're seeing a big change, certainly in our farming industry all across Europe.
Well, let's think about that, right? If the people are brought in from far away, you don't, I mean, this is a parallel, right? And as I always say, I'm the daughter of immigrants, granddaughter of immigrants. I believe in legal immigration. But if you have no control, if the globalist plan is to throw millions of people from all over the world at Britain, at France, at Germany, at the Netherlands, you're not going to have a European culture in the same way that you used to. You don't have a European culture that you can, or a British culture, right? Or a Scottish culture, Welsh culture that you can tend as a social contract. And that's not a racist thing to say, right? Anyone can be Welsh, anyone can be British from anywhere in the world, but citizens need to be able to have borders and have laws about how many people that country can absorb and acculturate to that culture, right? And if they can't do that, then they no longer have a country or a culture. And that's the globalist plan, right? Because destroying Western Europe as a beacon of liberty, destroying Britain as the home of the Magna Carta and the free press, all of that depends on throwing millions of people who don't come from constitutional republics or share, you know, European values at Europe. And I'm including Britain. So having said that, think about your food supply, right? If you're food supply comes from, if you're in Wales and your food supply comes from a Welsh farmer up the road, you can pretty much trust it. You know, if he poisons his neighbors or she poisons her neighbors, that can't be concealed. But if you bring in the food supply from anywhere and you add additives like Appeal, which is this Bill Gates derived coating, you know, on vegetables, or which is I found to be the case in Europe and in Britain, the legislation is so opaque that you really don't know what's in what you're bringing in to your local greengrocer, local supermarket, a Sainsbury's. Then horrible things can be done to your population just like they're being done to ours.
No, 100%. And we now have labeling that it says has a Union Jack on it. You think that's a British product, but it only means it's packaged in the UK. It could be from anywhere else. So I know. So it goes on and on. And you think, you can trust that, but actually you can't. But I mean, tell us about, because again, it's a bit different in the UK than it is in the States. You've got the FDA that covers everything, covers the pharmaceutical industry, the food industry. We kind of have separate. We got the Food Standards Agency for the food side, and then the Medicine and Healthcare Regulatory Agency, which is the pharmaceutical side. But tell us how the control that the FDA, the Food and Drugs Administration, have in the States, because it does seem to be all encompassing. I've talked to farmers and they talk about how they, I think there are only four or five processing, meat processing plants in America now. And so it's all reduced down to a industry that controls that process. But the FDA seem to have absolute control of everything that the Americans consume, just as the FSA, the same in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I have to drill into it in a little more detail, but broadly speaking, you're 100% right. I would throw in another agency called the USDA, which oversees farms and farms and what happens to farms. So something has to be USDA approved before a farmer can bring it to market, certainly when it comes to like milk and meat. So we do have a much more centralized system now, and it's one that no doubt the EU is trying to impose on Europe. I think Europe has, I mean, look at, you know, France and Italy, they have such a legacy of terroir, right? You know, this local production, they fetishize it. It's so much, as they should, right? So much a part of tourism that you go to Burgundy and you get grapes from Burgundy. You go to, you know, you get your pâté from Normandy. You know, your people have permission to call something champagne if it's from Champagne, right? And that's been wiped out in the US. And so I do think Europeans and British people should look at what's happened in the US and the fight we're having here over our food supply as their future if they don't resist and rebel, and especially resist EU directives, leave the EU like more aggressively than Britain's managed to leave the EU, and reclaim the right to grow and sell and buy food. Because what's happened in the US is not only this massive centralization, you're right, there are only a few meat processing plants, but also what you see behind me is an agricultural area. It's the Hudson Valley, and it's a very rich agricultural area. And there have been a lot of small food producers in this area. But what's happening is that the state is intentionally making it more and more difficult for people to be the independent farmers that they used to be in our nation's history, let alone for citizens to purchase from independent farmers. So for example, right up the road, there used to be this wonderful barn where you could, on the honor system, go into a little shed and there was cheese and milk products and ice cream made from these cows that were in this giant shed, and you would just leave your $5 for the pint of ice cream. And it was fantastic. And you'd sit in the sun and you could see the cows and you could eat your ice cream. And it was just, it contributed to the local economy. It was something tourists loved to do. The cows looked happy. Well, I spoke to the owners of that little dairy and they were freaking out a few years ago because the state said suddenly you need a $60,000 investment in pasteurizing this milk. And by the way, it is illegal in many places to purchase raw milk and pasteurized milk in the United States. And they weren't even selling raw milk. They had this $60,000 equipment imposed on them. Unnecessarily. And she kept saying, it was heartbreaking. She kept saying, look at our cows. They're healthy. You know, that we don't need this for our cows to be healthy. Our cows are healthy. So that was designed. We're seeing all these regulations to drive people out of, to close small farms, right? And then BlackRock buys up the land or the big producers buy up the, you know, the farm essentially and streamline it. You know, we bought half a cow from a neighbor and like we had to like, it was like a drug deal. You know? So we had to go to them, you know, without anyone knowing. And they loaded these packages up in the back of our car. And but we feel happy to be able to do that because we know that they raised the cow, they slaughtered the cow, they, you know, they didn't put any sperm suppressor in the cow's meat or mRNA. But we're down to that, right? There's, let me give you one other example. They're so sneaky. Like the Union Jack thing is just typical of the sneakiness. At the start of the pandemic, there used to be a thriving farmer's market in the town of Great Barrington up the road. Well, I was astonished to go to the farmer's market during lockdowns. And a farmer's market is outdoors, right? Yep. So it's the safest possible place you could get your food if you're worried about a respiratory infection. Well, I was astonished that they had made the population of farmers in the farmer's market half the number it had been. And I said, why are there only half the number of farmers here? And one of the people had been tasked in such a Marxist way by the governor with telling which farmers could show up and which couldn't, which meant that their farms would go out of business, right? They wouldn't have an income if they couldn't come to the farmer's market. And she was very upset that that was her job, but she had to do it if there was to be a farmer's market per our governor. And it was just, and she said it so that there won't be crowding. But here's the farmer's market on one parking lot, and here's an empty parking lot right across the street. They could have just doubled the acreage of the farmer's market and had all the farmers, right? But it was intentionally designed to crush local farms, and that's what it did.
Tell us, some of this seems to go full circle. I mean, some of your background is in like a political consultancy work where you control the narrative and you decide who gets which information. And at one time, I guess the political system controlled the news narrative. It's not so much anymore with 24-hour news. But it seems with the FDA are the gatekeepers of food and health in the same way that politicians want to control the news narrative. Is there a way past that? Because it does seem certainly, well, I don't even know if you can blame the Democrats over the Republicans, but it seems to be they're given more and more power and authority. And you mentioned that $60,000 to fit into new regulations, that more and more regulations come that don't seem to have a reason. But it does seem as though they are the absolute gatekeepers of all our health and food access.
Yeah, it's true, but I don't want you to, you know, Europeans and British viewers to be lulled into thinking it's not a risk to their own system. For example, I was a student in Britain, a graduate student for many years, and I was in your national health system. The NHS is an even more rigid gatekeeper of health than in some ways than our system, where at least you can get a private doctor pretty easily, or at least there's private medicine. I mean, the state, like, it's been so interesting to me to go back to Europe and see how Europeans and British people are losing their liberties. And it's so genius because both in Britain, even with this nominal exit Brexit, and in Europe in general, what I've seen is that for the post-war era, everything has been made increasingly lovely. If you rely on the state, you get your benefits, you get your healthcare, you get your free university or your low-cost university. But that seemed fine for decades when the EU or the NHS was not trying to murder you or imprison you in a 15-minute city or, you know, kill your grandma with midazolam or whatever the British version of remdesivir is. But then in 2020, it's like the lulling seductive superstructure got, you know, the window dressing got pulled away. And all of a sudden you realize, like, oh my God, if the NHS wants to, you know, administer end of life drugs for someone they say has COVID, they can do it and there's no alternative. And if, you know, the NHS wants to, I got so many desperate emails from NHS workers saying, I don't want this injection. My daughter doesn't want this injection. There's nowhere else to go, right? If you're a nurse or a doctor, very few other places to go to make a living. I remember just one tiny example. I was a graduate student and I went to my local NHS clinic and don't get mad at me because you pay £60 if you're not British, which is as it should be. I was not mooching off your system, but there was no other clinic to go to. And they said, oh, you can't have your records. And I'm like, why can't I have my records? They're like, well, because look at the fine print. There is no medical privacy anymore. And Boots, I went to Boots and I'm like, I want my records. They're like, we don't have them. It's digital. Like, it's all digital, right? I'm a tech CEO. It's all digital. They're like, they're in a warehouse in, you know, Bodley. Like, yeah. No, they're not. You have my records. You're just not giving them to me. I understood that the NHS data was being monetized and sold to third parties. People's privacy was being sold. My privacy was being sold. But you had absolutely no recourse, you know, legally. I mean, the hoops people went through, and British people sign away their right essentially to sue their doctors or the NHS if something terrible happens to them. By the fine print, they have to sign in the contract in order to just get seen by the doctor. So the state screws you as active advocates of your own health if you want the NHS to care for you in any way, and it's very difficult to go around the NHS. So I just want to say that because this is intentional, right? For 50 years, it was lovely, or 60 years. And then they're like, okay, now we've got you. And same with, you know, benefits. I mean, people in the Netherlands were telling me they were scared to speak up about losing their liberties because they were scared of losing their benefits. And it's not great in a way that in the US, there aren't any benefits, you know, except Social Security or Medicare. But it does mean that people aren't scared of losing their benefits. So we've been able to mount a more effective resistance. So I just want to how can I put it? Yes, the FDA is very effectively strangling our food and drugs, but there's a lot of illusion of choice in Britain and Europe that does not bear scrutiny.
Trust me, most of our viewers will have gone past the point where we believe that our institutions want the best for us. Hey, you've done the whole thing on food and your cooking and your herbs. I think it's herbs with an H, but anyway, we'll go with herbs. But mustard oil and then turmeric, which people obviously have heard of. And then you'd won astragalus. Anti-cancer, immune boosting, and again, I think we've been told up to this point that is kind of backward. Those are societies that actually haven't advanced, and we've advanced so far that we've got a drug for that problem. Right. And you're going back to actually, you don't need a drug. In fact, if you take a drug, you probably need another one and another one to fix all the side effects that have happened. But whenever that video was restricted, I mean, what were your thoughts? You're simply talking about a herbal, not even a medicine, just a herb that's been used for some of these things are Chinese medicine that have been used for maybe hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and suddenly in America it's bad. What was your first response when you're thinking you're just trying to put out good information on food, and then suddenly that gets removed?
It's a gift as a journalist, right? The more bots and trolls and censorship you see in a certain subject, it's like a big sign saying dig here, there's a story here. I was struck, but then I did the math and I understand why these resources are being thrown at suppressing this information. I mean, I mentioned some of the numbers, but let me just give you one example briefly. There's a tonic called Lydia Pinkham's tonic, and it was famous in the 19th century, may have been sold in Britain, I don't know. It was an American tonic. Lydia Pinkham had learned about these herbs from Native Americans who had used them for, as you say, centuries. And it was bought, she was heralded as a pioneer in the history books I'd read as a child. Then the formula got bought and reformulated by a small pharma company, then bought again and reformulated by a larger pharma company. And now you cannot get the original version of Lydia Pinkham's tonic. And notably, I saw that in JSTOR and all over the internet, there's like a campaign that started in about 2020 to smear her as a quack, and to even smear the women who loved her product, which were thousands and thousands, as like alcoholics, right? Because she used some alcohol in her formulation. Well, that's really interesting. You know, whenever you see a smear campaign, there's something going on. Yeah. And I bought the herbs to reconstruct Lydia Pinkham's tonic. Well, what are the numbers? The numbers are astonishing. It's a $16 billion menopause industry worldwide. And if black cohosh and, you know, false unicorn root and fenugreek can ease the symptoms of, you know, menstrual pain and menopause and, you know, be a uterine tonic so women don't miscarry, all the things that like for me as a feminist, if thousands and thousands of women are writing thank you letters to Lydia Pinkham, something's working, right? And so it's very interesting to me that formulation was bought up and erased because it was working. So that's a $16 billion industry. The whole notion that menopause is a disease or menstruation, you can't handle it by yourself, you need these pills or those pills, is just nonsense. And Native Americans have known that forever. And that's what got suppressed. So I'm not surprised, even though I'm kind of impressed, that we've stumbled on something that threatens so many profit centers. But I guess the other thing I would say is that many people, you know, the kind of marginalization of like traditional remedies, right? Or herbal remedies. it's so fascinating to me because it's not science-based. And I guess I too, daughter of hippies, you know, whatever, I too kind of thought, oh yeah, sure, ginger tea, whatever, you know? That maybe these things have some mild benefit, but it's nothing compared to, you know, prescription medicine. But now I've looked both at the formulation and distribution of prescription medicine, but also I've read Rockefeller Medicine Men, which shows how the Flexner Report took over basically all medical licensing and medical education in the United States to direct it to a petroleum-based pharmaceutical product system by the guy, John D. Rockefeller, who had the petroleum, right? And then lastly, as I mentioned earlier, I, you know, have learned to read scientific peer-reviewed studies, and these so much does better. As I said, so much does better. So I think that's why my stuff is being censored, because I actually don't just say, hey, try garlic, you know, if you're having inflammatory conditions. Here's this NIH database, which has this peer-reviewed study from the Journal of, you know, Oncology that shows that you're actually going to do better or as well with the guava leaf tea or with the sassafras or with the mustard oil than you would do with the pharmaceutical equivalent. Mm-hmm. I mean, can I just say, and then I promise I'll stop ranting. I have a friend who has cancer. So many people have cancer now. The number of herbal products that kill cancer cells, both in vivo and in vitro, meaning both in the lab and in mammals, is off the charts effective. And so that's all I want to say. You know, like, people deserve to know. This is informed consent.
Where do then massive, but we'll reduce it down to just a little bit, where then vaccines fit into this. I saw a couple of days ago, I think it was RFK put a post up, or it might have been Ed Dart, talking about, I think, something like 18 times the level of cancer in those who are vaccinated as opposed to those who are non-vaccinated. And this is coming again and again. We've had all different way. William Mackis on recently talking about this whole area. And again, it's looking for alternatives and the difficulty of finding those and being dismissed crazy for looking at a way to solve your situation outside the norm. But that whole thing, I can't think that's what will resonate with a lot of people. A friend of mine we came down with cancer a few days ago, came out, and again, it's happening again and again. And there does seem to be these natural remedies for it that that haven't never been discussed. I remember a friend taking natural remedies maybe 20 years ago, and I was thinking, they're just crazy. Just blast your body with chemo. And I'm thinking, actually, there probably was a lot in that. I think people are delving deeper into this. And I know a number of the posts you put up, the videos you mentioned, that actually they are can be used to actually combat cancer. And I think that's what will resonate with a lot of people.
Yeah, and I really want to stress so I don't get arrested because the FDA, seriously.
You're not a medical doctor. You're not a medical doctor.
But when I say anti-cancer, that is the conclusion that these peer-reviewed studies come to. I agree with you. I think it's a matter of urgency to get these this evidence, I'll put it that way, to people so they can decide for themselves. But what I would say here's the fundamental error in the Western post Rockefeller medical approach. I was in a store where they were selling these herbal treatments, and I stumbled upon them because I live in Brooklyn now part time in a Caribbean and African neighborhood, basically, where they have these very intact herbalist traditions, right? Like they never stopped. They remember what they're for. They use them appropriately. They never stopped. So I'm in a Caribbean owned store and I'm looking at these teas and one of them is anti-cancer. And I'm like, well, luckily I don't need that. And there was this beat as this guy looked at me like, you're an idiot. You know, like, and I kind of have realized on this journey of understanding how these herbs work, that is a stupid way to think, right? You take these treatments so that you won't need them, so that you keep your body in an optimal immune state, so that it's efficiently dealing with getting rid of toxins or threats as you go through your day. And I guess what I mean to say there is a lot of these herbs have multiple benefits, right? They're good for your circulation. They're good for your immune system. They're anti-inflammatory. Well, that's how our systems actually work. You know, it's not like just because there's like oncology over here and, you know, cardiology over here, it doesn't mean these are separate systems, right? This was put in place by Rockefeller and the Flexner Report and his funding of medical schools to be more about research, as it turns out, for industry than healing. But healing is all interconnected. So if you have an herb that's good for your circulation, it's anti-inflammatory, you know, it's likely to be good for other things as well. Good for your mood, good for your sleep, etc. So I guess I just want to confess that I was so indoctrinated that I too thought we're just a bunch of systems, because that's how the West and Western medicine teaches us to think, and we have to treat our symptoms. Whereas many other traditions, including those that use herbs, understand that you're keeping the whole system in balance and working effectively, and that is a state of health.
Well, Rockefeller Medicine Man is next on my list after Privacy is Power, which I'm in the middle of reading at the moment. So that is definitely next. When I heard you mention one of your videos, I thought, oh, that's next on my list. Hey, I'm wondering, is there going to be a Cooking with Naomi Christmas book coming out? It would do well.
That's so funny. People do like the cooking. I was astonished that people liked my cooking videos, because I think of myself as such a bad cook, but I'm getting a little better. I'm going to put these into a book. I think people deserve to know. They deserve to know the science. I mean, to your point, what is chemistry? And I promise I'll stop, but the same chemistry that goes into showing a pharmaceutical intervention works, right, with all the nonsense we know go into those trials, that's the same chemistry that peer-reviewed studies show, mabi bark or, you know, guava leaves or avocado leaves, also work, right? It's all chemistry. They're not different kinds of things, which is how we're propagandized. They're medicines too.
Oh, 100%. Well, Naomi, I always appreciate you coming on, and I think every time's a different subject. I think that's the mark of you as a journalist, actually going where the information leads. And that can always be a different direction. But I've loved those videos. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your thoughts on that.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the conversation. Take care.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.